Welcome, everybody. We're back. We've been off for a while, but we're back.
Yeah, the doctors have always said that we've been a little off.
Yeah, but we're back now.
We're back.
Hey, if you didn't know already, this is a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
David Futernick.
And this is
Paul Gullius.
And we're talking season 2, episode 12, The Knight in White Satin Armor.
Ooh, you got it this time. Yeah. Good for you. You did your homework.
Whoa. You know what? I watched the episode right before this.
Wow.
The hiatus has really sharpened your intro.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know it's always sharp.
I'm in tight, man.
With us today is actor, writer, stand-up comedian, my neighbor Lou DiMaggio. Hello.
Welcome.
Oh. Do you like the title of our podcast? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, basically.
That's obviously for people that, you know, get it.
Right.
Kind of sums
it up. So some people that just oh.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are probably a lot of people who think that. We got to clarify, you know, for those people.
That ship has sailed, man. We should have thought about that last year when we came up with this shit.
Yeah.
Sure. So Lou, you know, let's want to tell our listeners, like, you know, more about you. I mean, why don't you go ahead and say something about yourself?
Say something about myself?
Yeah.
In terms of of how it relates to The Sopranos, or
Sure. I mean, what's your experience with the show? I mean, you said you watched it live, pretty much.
I mean, at the time, and maybe still to this day, it's certainly one of the greatest TV series ever made, right? It's got to be in the top five, even with all the shows that have come after it.
Yeah.
So it was, at the time, you know, an incredible must-see watch when we had to wait a whole week, right?
Yeah.
And then seasons, hiatuses in between. And
they were years,
I never missed
sometimes.
An episode. It was amazing. Just couldn't wait to see it.
Yeah. I had the pleasure. These guys are... saw a little bit of it live, but I watched most of it live, and I mean, there's going to be nothing like that ever again, which I loved waiting for a week for an episode. It was great.
Yeah, and you know, you really would like work your week around it. You'd be what are we going to eat, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
How are we going to lean into tonight's episode, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on the right podcast to bring up what to eat.
Oh, okay.
It's all we ever talk about is like the food in every scene and stuff, because we're disgusting monsters.
Yeah, so. Well, we just miss the East Coast and all the great Italian food out there.
Yeah,
I know, it's really it's somewhat available out here, but you really gotta pick. You gotta really weed through a lot of places to find. And even then, it's good, you know.
Right.
But it's not like New York, where the average corner store is better than the best place here.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the weather, you can't. The weather.
Come on.
It's funny. Lou was just telling us he was using the quarantine to catch up on some TV shows, and he just watched Breaking Bad for the first time. So I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts? Like, how do you think it stacks up against Sopranos? Because those two are consistently mentioned as like some of the greatest.
It's right there, man.
Yeah. I agree.
I can't. You know, I couldn't even. That's like saying, you know, what do you like better? Not Coke and Pepsi, because I like, you know, Coke is obviously better. But it's just, they're both really great. I couldn't really pick one over the other.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. Yeah. It's like great baseball players.
Wrong answer, Lou. You're on a Sopranos podcast.
You know, if I had to pick one.
Guns your head, Lou. Now
I've also watched Breaking Bad more recently, right?
Right.
That has a lot to do with it. Because I watched the episode for tonight, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot how great the show is, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny, it holds up 20 years later.
Because
this episode, Knight in White Satin Armor, aired originally April 2nd, the year 2000.
Yeah.
Wow. Did not realize it was that old.
Y2K. No.
That's wild.
Yeah. Remember when Y2K hit and all the computers crapped out and
the world
fell apart? That was so scary.
Yeah. You guys ever see that listen to that podcast about Y2K? It's really great. I don't want to digress, but if you ever get it, I forget the name of it.
Yeah, we usually like to tell our listeners to stop listening to us and go listen to some other podcast.
It's true. It's true.
Well, we can edit this out.
No,
it's too much work.
but one thing that Lou, well, for our listeners, Lou was a big stand-up back in the day in New York in the, what was it, like late 80s, early 90s or something like that, or 80s?
Yeah, like from mid 80s through, I would say like started like 80, 83 and moved out to LA in like 89. So I was in New York doing that during the go-go 80s.
During the go-go 80s. Yeah. Came up with the likes of people like Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. And you were in another HBO show, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a really great Sopranos connection because
that's what I wanted to hear.
I think Curb was on right before the Sopranos.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this was, I had a really nice recurring role in season 3. I played one of the restaurant investors. And my name in the show was Lou DiMaggio.
Yeah.
So remember in Sopranos when they're looking for a hitman, they want somebody to come from out of town. And Junior says, "You call Lou DiMaggio."
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna ask you about that.
The night that episode was on, and he said that, I was on Curb right after that. So it was one
that
of those.
So great.
Yeah, that
great
is so moments. Surreal.
That's funny. I mean, that's wild.
We on our last episode, I think it was the last episode. We were talking about like what character, a group of characters we would have wanted to see more that we didn't see a lot of, and we mentioned those weird people.
Lou DiMaggio
and
in Rhode Island,
his weird crew up in Rhode Island. Yeah.
That's right.
That's funny.
Was he use a baseball bat? That was his special.
Yeah, we're having cake for father.
And I knew some people around it. I had a friend that was in the pilot. Ed Krasnick was a comedian that I knew very well.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. So he was like a New York, 80s New York, like stand-up guy.
Yeah, except he started, I think, in Boston. He might have been in Boston at the time. He eventually worked his way there. He was also in San Francisco. All the big hubs were L.A., New York, Boston, and San Francisco. Those were the best, you know, comedy scenes.
Yeah.
Right.
Wait, and so he played, was he the guy who was doing stand up in the Bing?
I think so.
And he said first of all, it was insane, the food. Like you can't have people like that and have craft service that anybody normal craft service. It was literally probably somebody's aunt was doing the cooking or something. Right. It was legit, you know? Yeah. And he said the characters, like, he goes, you know, Uncle Junior, Johnny Olin, the Godfather.
Yeah.
Like he would just come up to Ed on at the craft service table and go, "Ed, want a Twix? You like the Twix? It's a candy bar, Twix. Try it, have a Twix."
That should have been
like that. So you guys appreciate that, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I love Uncle Junior hawking Twixes.
I once had an experience like that at a table read where I found myself at a table where they had these sandwiches from, I don't know where they got them from. They were breakfast sandwiches. And I all of a sudden I find myself standing next to Alan Arkin. and, you know, like, wow, it's freaking Alan Arkin. But this is what I hear him say. What do you think the Santa Fe is? It's just all about the sandwich.
Yeah.
You think it's spicy? Okay.
All these legends that are just like weirdos.
Yeah. That's a dream of mine. Like if I like met Robert De Niro, I'd want to talk about, like, you know,
the breakfast burritos on set. Yeah.
What was craft services like?
Yeah.
What was De Niro's take on the craft services? Sure.
The sausage was a little spicy. A little spicy. The sausage.
It's a little spicy. You're a little out of line yourself. My son worked on a movie, because my son is an actor, as Joe knows, and he worked on Daddy's Home 2. Mm-hmm. And so they shot it in Boston. So the guys, the local Teamsters in Boston, you know, they have their own stories. And they said that they called De Niro the cheese man. Because he made them go find him some kind of specific cheese that was like a huge pain in the ass. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the cheese man.
Yeah. The cheese fuck.
Fucking cheese man. By the way, how do you think Tony Soprano would be reacting to the quarantine?
Oh, God.
Not well.
It's fucking bullshit. You know that? It's fucking bullshit. I got to be in the house. We're calm. I got to get the fuck out of here.
I don't think of all these guys not being able to see their Gumars, or just seeing them and getting COVID and giving them to their families. Oh,
yeah, infecting their children or something. Yeah.
We gotta figure out a way to put the Gumars in the bubble.
right. The kids gotta go back
to
school.
Gotta test it for the COVID. What do you think I am?
Gotta reopen the schools, Carm.
Oh, so I'm supposed to feel sorry for your girlfriend in this pandemic?
You, Christopher, and your fucking millennial friends. That's what's making this thing last so long. Now get it fucking straight, all right?
It's because they're doing more testing.
Oh, yeah. Everybody wants to see that episode.
We got to get a piece of that testing.
Yeah. Oh, they absolutely would. They absolutely would.
You know they would hijack a toilet paper truck or something.
Right.
Oh, these antibody tests, they don't work.
So I also have a great joke or reference. That's one of my favorite Sopranos references. You know the comedian Nick DiPaolo?
Sure.
Nick did a bit one time. Every comedian has a line of another comedian that they wish they wrote or they could steal, but you know. So his joke was, people are always asking me, am I offended by the way Italian-Americans are portrayed in Sopranos? He goes, no, because that's fucking real. He goes, I'm offended by the way Italians are represented in Olive Garden commercials, because that's bullshit. No Italian would ever touch that stuff, you know?
So, yeah.
I love that he used that. That was such a great comparison, you know?
That's great. Hey, he had a great little bit in the Columbus Day episode. He like plays a cop in the Columbus Day episode Sopranos. Right.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
I didn't either. Bit part. That's funny.
It was one of my great disappointments that I was never able to do just something on that show. But when living in LA, there weren't a lot of, I guess there were some people that went back there, but it wasn't really common then to be a day player and go to New York just for that. You kind of had to be there.
Hey, man, you got the name drop though.
I did.
Character.
I was telling Joe, I don't think it's a coincidence because I crossed paths with Frank Renzulli. I wrote a pilot with Colin Quinn, and this was for HBO. This was like 96 or 7, right before The Sopranos. And we didn't have any show running experience. You know how that goes. So they want to put you with a showrunner. They like your idea. And it was him. That was the guy. So when that episode came on, I go, oh, I know. That's not a coincidence they used me.
Yeah.
I must have thought of it. Somebody must have been thinking about names. He goes, oh, Lou DiMaggio. And then like, he kills guys with baseball bats. Like, it's a perfect, like, it all just came there. So I probably gave him that without.
That's
funny.
What was Renzulli like? Was he cool?
Put him on the spot.
I don't really know. I didn't really know him well. I don't know. I found him to be a little, he seemed to be a little condescending. Mm. Like he thought he was like, you know, Mr. The Shit. But we didn't really end up having much of a exposure to him. But
yeah,
sure.
he was the guy that they went to. So he had something going on over there with HBO, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he left the show after the third season, maybe even the second. So maybe there's that attitude that David Chase didn't like. Who knows?
Yeah. Fucking Red Zoe. What a fucking... Joe. We hate that guy.
we were testing you. We fucking hate him.
But you know, yeah, like I just thought he was a little bit of a douche, but I didn't really have that much
interaction.
This is short, this is off topic, but what was your pilot about with Colin Quinn?
It was about a guy who worked in he was like in the Broadway stage scene, you know, like those guys, the grips. Like that whole world is fascinating. Those guys at work, they sit in the bottom of the Broadway theater and do nothing. They sweep the stage in the very beginning. And they go down to these cubby holes below the stage, and they have this world down there. They're watching the ball game. They got refrigerators, and they don't do anything. And no one else is allowed to do anything. And it's a whole world. And a lot of them are local West Side people that have been grandfathered into these jobs. So.
Right.
It was an area that had never really been covered, and we had this idea that, you know, Colin was like a screw up, and he was part of that world, and he couldn't even do that, even though it was like they were handing it to him. He would just screw everything up, and we called it a day in the life of Mickey Mac. It was just all about, like, he was like a degenerate gambler, and just was a mess. And they loved the idea, but the pilot never got made, but at least we wrote it. We got paid for that. So
yeah, there you go. Cool. I 100% would have watched that.
Yeah, me too.
Sounds good, right?
Yeah.
I love degenerates.
Yeah. Do you stay in touch with Colin Quinn?
Yeah. He was in my doc, actually, which we should plug the doc.
Yeah, hey, no doubt.
Yeah.
Where Have You Gone, Lou DiMaggio, which is available on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. Otherwise, I think it's $7 or something, but it's a doc that I made that a friend of mine wanted to make, a producer, about, which started out to be about Catch a Rising Star in New York and that scene that we were talking about. It was so hot stand up in those days in New York. And again, a lot of those people that Joe mentioned, they were all starting out there. So in my doc, I have an interview with Larry David, and I have Joy Behar, Susie Essman, Colin, and those people especially, I used to see almost every day for years. It was like a family going through that scene. And it was a wonderful time, you know? So we talk about all of that and what it was like. And if you're into stand-up at all, I think you'd enjoy it.
Oh,
and then it's also got a little bit of a plot line where I haven't done it for a long time. And then I go out and do it again. I get back into it.
Wow.
Nice.
So that part, you know, you're going to have to watch.
When I lived in New York, I used to go to a Comedy Cellar every Thursday, like in the early 2000s. So I saw all the Tough Crowd people were always there. It was that era.
Yeah, so Nick was there.
Yep.
You know, I also, like that era too, I was well entrenched here then. But, you know, stand-up had that incredible boom in the 80s and into the early 90s, and then it kind of died.
Right.
And I kind of got out around... I was still doing it here up until like 97, 8-ish. But again, like those guys, like I always thought if I only would have toughed it out, but it was hard in those days. It was not as fun as it was previous. Yeah. And a lot of those people came out of that world where it was just, you'd go to the club, it was packed every night. It was these incredible audiences, celebrities and politicians and would come to see stand-up shows. And then it just went away. Yeah. And people like Colin is a perfect example. He just toughed it out. He hung in, and he also started. I actually worked with him on his first one-man show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I helped him write it, and then after that, you know, he continued to do that, and that's become his main thing now, which is wonderful work.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's where I came from.
Oh, that's awesome! awesome.
That's so cool.
Should we jump into this specific episode?
Yeah.
A little chat. This is an iconic episode.
We're glad to have you here, Lou, because this is like a fan favorite. And
I have one more. I have one more sort of weird celebrity name drop situation here. I worked with Turturro. I had this weird gig. I was writing. My career took this weird turn where I started working, writing on, producing on game shows and things like that. And it was cool because like every couple of years it recycles and they make new ones again. And it's not something I ever wanted to do, but I fell into it. And it was nice because it was a good gigs.
Steady work.
So I was doing an iteration of Pyramid, you know, the $10,000 Pyramid.
Yeah. Mm.
And they were trying to book celebrities. And they were having a hard time and they were just going nuts because the network is always like, we want Robert De Niro and Meryl Streep. Yeah, sure. They're going to do the Pyramid. But they actually
can't afford the cheese. We can't afford his cheese bill.
He's got a cheese rider. He's out. So I happen to know Nick Turturro.
We're
Yankee fans, so we're familiar with Nick. We're familiar with Nick's current.
Nick.
You know,
Nick is
current
the most
brand.
Insane Yankee fan in the world.
Yes. Yeah, we watched that the podcast episode of with you and Nick.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, okay,
it was great.
Yeah, he's something else, man. He's a piece of work.
Yeah.
So I know him because I worked with him on some things. His agents were trying to harness him. At some pitch and they needed somebody to try to make sense of what he was pitching. Everybody thinks it's funny and they love him, but he's all over the place. So I just mentioned, because they were trying to do a soprano show and they had Steve Sciarippa, I think, was supposed to do it. But Steve Sciarippa and Ada were in and Steve dropped out. And I said, you know, I know Nick, I could ask him. And they were like, are you kidding me? You know him? I mean, it'd be perfect because they're related too. They're
right, right.
You know, it's not the Soprano connection anymore, but whatever, it's fine. And I got him to do it and it was a disaster. Because, you know, he's trying to play the game. You know how the game works. It's word association, right? So he'd be like, I don't know, milk, I don't know, this is too hard. This is like in the middle of the game, this is happening. And then I hung out with her a little bit and she said, you know, he's nuts. You guys shouldn't have built it. In a good way.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
I talked to her, she was very nice, very, very nice.
Nice.
That's good to hear, you always like to hear that.
Yeah, she was very cool.
This is an Ada Turturro heavy episode. So
I know. That's why I brought it up.
I was trying
to find. I have a picture of me with her somewhere and I can't find it. So sorry.
Lou.
I know. If I find it, I'll send it in.
It's going on our Instagram.
That's right.
Because this is sort of like the end of Ada Turturro's arc, this episode, where, like for this whole season, where she was introduced in the second season. And she's kind of out on a bus to God knows where by the end.
We'll get into it.
So, she's going to Seattle?
Yeah.
That's where she's going.
On the bus from New Jersey?
All in all, I'd say it was a good visit.
Yeah.
Well, how do you break down the episode?
Yeah, we just sort of like go through it beat by beat and we'll just talk about.
It's quite a surprise what happened. In that episode.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, let's kick it. So our podcast is like, we should alert everyone if this is the first episode you listen to. We don't give a fuck about spoilers.
You
should have watched the entire show by this point if you're listening to this podcast.
Right.
So we could talk. I mean, this is one of the most shocking moments in the series, right?
Yes.
When Janice ends up shooting Richie. But how do we get there? We could start from the beginning.
Well, it's brilliant. It's brilliant the way that gets set up because they're laying pipe that Richie's going to get whacked. But
right.
She's the last person you would expect.
You see when Tony comes to Livia's house after she's killed him, he has the biggest smirk on his face.
Yep.
He's like, when he first sees the body, he's like trying so hard not to laugh hysterically because he's like, this is amazing. I don't have to have Furio kill this guy. Like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's just funny because it's like she pulled like, almost in a way, it was almost like a Michael Corleone move. It's like, it's just in her blood.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because they didn't really like lay any of the groundwork for her like being angry or frustrated with him or murderous in any way other than, you know, she would suggest to Richie, you know, that he should be the boss sort of subtly had her throughout the season sort of hinting at Richie to take care of her brother.
It's funny because like all three, like all these like three Sopranos all turn on Richie and are responsible for his death in this, in some way in this episode. Like Tony okays his hit and Junior decides, like, you know, he couldn't fucking sell it. And Junior's like, yeah, okay, he's got to go. And right. then it's
that, by the way, to me, Janice, is the most brilliant thing in the show, is when Junior sort of, you see him thinking, well, oh, right. okay. Like right. when he just finally just decides this guy doesn't have it.
Right.
Yeah. And Bob, right, I'm going with Tony, but he would have right. screwed Tony.
Totally. Oh, so? Absolutely.
You think if Richie was able to like convince the other capos, he would have offed Tony?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, yeah. I think he was always willing to do that.
Yeah. Well, they say the Barisis are like the biggest family within the family, and if the Barisis had okayed it, that would have been that.
Yeah.
But Albert like didn't want to go against Tony.
And Junior's got so much money issues with his trial that he like, right. he would want to do it.
Can't fuck around.
Well, that was his like main motivation for doing it, right? The whole like garbage routes and his trial coming up and Tony's not letting him sell coke along the routes and like, but yeah. So I guess, I mean, he's so full of shit though. Like sort of like walks through through his own like thinking of how he can look in front of Bobby Bacala like, oh, I'm such a smart fucking
when Bobby's just standing there in the kitchen and he doesn't say anything and he goes, what? And he goes, yeah. I'm in awe of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Bless Bobby Bacala.
The best.
I almost wanted Junior to be like, shut the fuck up.
You know, by the way, I knew Sharippa really well because, believe it or not, Steve Sharippa used to book the Riviera Comedy Club in Las Vegas.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
They did a lot of, and he was one of those guys where you'd show up on the gig and he'd go, hey, come in my office. And he would go, look at this cheese I got. A cheese again.
That's a cheese, of course. Yeah. What kind of cheese was
love it?
It was like some kind of provolone.
I love it.
But, you know, in Vegas at that time, you know, you had to know somebody.
Right. Right.
There's no provolone in the desert. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the desert, right. That's not a place where you would normally find good provolone.
Right. No. A lot of cactus cheese.
Yeah.
A lot of cactus
cheese. It's a provolone desert, if you'll pardon the expression.
Ooh, right.
I mean, so that's like the major thing of this episode. You know, Richie ends up getting sliced and diced at Satrial's.
Oh, my God. That scene was so rough.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Christopher says, I'm not going to eat here for like at least a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're using the saw and everything.
Right, yeah. Really, just 30 days will do it and you'll be back to eating.
Like, I still got to eat here. Parmesan. Not, yeah. let's get that straight. I'm still going to eat it. I'm going to wait.
Right, we'll hold
everything will be clean.
Right. But yeah, so other big things this episode, Tony finally breaks it off with his Russian guma, Irina, who we didn't really see a ton this season, I think it's like the second scene in the episode, you know. Yeah, he finishes banging her and then he sort of has this conversation with her where he's like, you know, don't you want kids, don't you want family, like why do you guys think he does it in that moment, like why is this the end of that relationship?
She's just becoming too much of a liability, or she's becoming too much of a pain in his ass.
She's a loose cannon. And then that shit, like calling him at home, that you can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. which of course she does again later on in Whitecaps. Yeah. Which initiates the separation.
Oh, yeah, it kicks off when Carmela and Tony finally divorce or separate, which is...
You know, it's one of those things where he's so beleaguered, and this episode is one of those episodes where he's got so much shit to deal with. He's always got to deal with his mother. He's got the crazy sister. He's got Uncle Junior. He's got
Richie. The crazy
Guma, you know, and he's got to keep it straight with his wife. He's got so much shit going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And he's got to fix everything all the time.
Yeah. And so he's just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, yep. He's tapping out on that one.
Jackie
Smartly,
Jr.
But then it ironically
Jackie Jr. appears.
Up...
We set up Jackie Jr. for season 3.
Oh, yes. Jason Cerbone is...
I always forget that he's like introduced, besides like the flashback when he's like a kid or whatever, like a teenager. Mm-hmm. But like, I forget that he gets set up at the end of the season always.
Yeah, I wonder if they associated actually...
with season 3.
Like had like knew then that they were going to do a Jackie Jr. storyline for season 3. I mean,
seems like they it seems like it.
It seems like they're sending
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I think that David Chase was pretty thorough and probably way ahead of the game.
Forward thinking.
Yeah.
The only thing, like, I know that Nancy Marchand, Olivia Soprano, the actress died between seasons, and that sort of like fucked up what the third season was supposed to be. So I wonder if like Jackie Jr. storyline got like bumped up a notch or two.
We gotta write a Jackie Jr. story now.
They did that weird CGI stuff with her.
Oh my god,
that was strange. That's
super bizarre, and the technology wasn't quite the best yet. So
it wasn't there yet.
It looks
very creepy.
Weird. Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of that, like, here's a technical choice that they made in this episode was the subtitles. Like,
yes,
were they necessary?
That's a really good point. I never saw that before because I accidentally had my subtitles on.
Yeah.
And I turned it off, and then it was on. Then there was a subtitle. I'm like, wait a second, I already turned that off.
Right.
But then I realized that it looked to me like they were cherry picking areas that they think you might not understand. It was always what the Russians were talking.
Right. Yeah.
Like, in case you didn't get that, because it was kind of a complicated line.
Right.
And I guess that's cool.
I guess I've ever seen before, like, just like certain lines of dialogue. In English subtitles, when someone is speaking English, even though it's like broken.
Well, I actually watch Peaky Blinders that way.
It's gonna say,
so
Lou, they are hard.
There's so many
to
lines you miss if you
decipher.
Didn't. It's pretty understandable, but it helps a lot.
Yeah.
That's how people watch Game of Thrones too. I think these were added in though too, like they weren't on the live like episode.
Oh, really?
I thought I heard that somewhere. I didn't research it, but
no, I thought you said spider. I'm all right. Remember that moment where a spider has the thing where he shoots the guy in the foot in the bakery and then
Michael Imperioli
does
the same thing in season one. Yeah.
Yes.
Turnabout is fair play.
Probably the best Goodfellas reference in the series of many, but that's the most.
That's the other thing that's so great about the Sopranos, right? Is the
like self-awareness.
Oh yeah.
Richie's in Mean Streets.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's one of the great mob movies, you know, underrated.
Oh, for sure.
Probably not underseen, but it's really an incredible little movie, and
it doesn't get mentioned enough in the mob canon.
I love that movie. It's so
Richie
good.
Richie was Michael. Mm. He was the guy that owned the bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a lion in his basement, remember?
And and Melfi's husband, the guy who plays Melfi's husband, also, he's the guy that Robert De Niro owes money to.
Right. Those were the guys. It was Harvey Keitel and those two guys and De Niro were the main guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, actually, he was Michael, Melfi's husband.
Yes.
Richie's name was.
Yeah.
That's that scene with De Niro goes, what's the matter? You don't like this $10?
Right.
Borrow money from all over town. I don't pay anybody back.
I mean, if David Chase could have just like stolen the cast from all of Scorsese's mafia movies, he kind of did. But
he's got Main Streets guys. He's got Goodfellas guys.
Yeah.
He's got Godfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. So you can't get
some real mob guys in there too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Tony Sirico spent some time in jail for sure. Probably Walnuts.
Oh yeah,
and I heard that.
If I'm not mistaken, Tony Sirico painted my mother's apartment.
Are you kidding me?
Living Corona.
That's a great little tidbit.
Not kidding. Because
where did you in Brooklyn?
In Brooklyn,
Corona, Queens.
Oh, in Corona, Queens.
Oh, in Queens. Okay.
Yeah. Because I forget what it was. Was it, it was Raging Bull? Because he was in all those Scorsese movies.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
He was, my parents' neighbor across the street, they grew up together in Brooklyn. She was him growing up. And yeah, she said he was like, he was
a hustler. So like, if he's not doing a job for somebody, he's painting somebody's apartment. You know, he's making it work. You know,
I met a guy in college who did Sopranos dinner theater because my good friend, my college roommate was doing.
Hold on a second, Sopranos dinner theater.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Like,
I'm down with that. Whatever that is.
My college roommate, my best man at my wedding, who was on our podcast, Joey Coco. He played Christopher Malted Sunday. And he was sort of like the MC of this dinner theater, which was hilarious. And we did it. He did it on Long Island, and it was like
it was like Tony and Tina, but for Sopranos. Yeah,
and it was it was during the Sopranos. Like people ate it up.
Oh, that must have been great. How was the food?
Yeah, it was okay.
How was the cheese?
You gotta do it every night.
The guy who played Tony was like, we're pretty sure he was connected because he was working on a house at Hofstra, like near Hofstra, that like. He was just doing contracting work there for like a year. Yeah. Like it was never getting done. And we'd come by and he'd be like, yeah, let's go get some sandwiches. He told us a story that his dad knew Tony Sirico like back in the day. And like he would sell illegal fireworks.
Well, there you go.
I could have guessed.
The gateway.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, that's my Tony Sirico
story. I mean, he probably still does it on the side.
You know, that's the thing with those guys. It would whatever it is. So, if 4th of July, they would sell fireworks with Christmas trees at Christmas. There was always that's the guy you got to go to get
whatever the hustle is.
And that's why New York is one of those places where you literally can get anything you want or need anytime. Right? Yes. You know, like when it's raining, the umbrella guy's there. It's just no place like that, really.
That's true.
Need a cooler. They got a red cooler for
red. Red. Got to be red.
Ramsey's out there.
Also, I will say this little story. If it ties back into the episode, because I think maybe this is the second time we see him, but we haven't seen him for a long time. Is the head of the FBI, Frank Pellegrino. The actor's name is Frank Pellegrino.
Yeah. Cubitoso is the character name. Yeah.
He owned Reyes.
Yep.
He's the son of Frank Pellegrino, the original guy.
Right. He's the original Frank Pellegrino.
Wait a minute. Which
are you sure? No.
Oh, the older guy.
The older guy with the glasses. The
young guy reports to.
Yes.
Yes.
The
older guy. That's Frank Pellegrino.
Hold on 1 second. I got to get something.
Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
Is that the original
owner of Reyes?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Well, he's Frank Pellegrino was probably. I mean, that restaurant's been in business forever. So he's probably was running it since the '60s or something like that. But I have a couple of things here that I wanted to show you guys.
Yeah,
yeah.
So this.
Oh yes,
Sopranos Family Cookbook.
I have an autographed copy.
No way.
From the guy who wrote it, his name is Alan Rucker.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine knew it really well. So he signed it to me. He said, "To Lou, a paisan," which of course I'm not. Manja, Alan.
That's great. I have awesome. That same thing, not signed by Alan Walker. But
I have this.
Oh, I've never seen
that.
One.
Entertaining with the Sopranos.
By Carmela Soprano.
By Carmela.
I didn't realize that they were all related, and I also have this.
And the Reyes cookbook. Very nice.
Oh, so there you go. Here's the back cover.
There he is.
That's him, right?
So there are the generations.
Okay. Yeah, that's him. So the guy in the center is not the Frank Pellegrino on the show. That's the original guy, right?
No, on the right. He's on the right. He's on the right is Frank Pellegrino.
This is Frank Pellegrino, right?
Yeah.
And no, but I'm saying.
And she was Mia Farrow's muse for Broadway Danny Rose.
Oh, no kidding.
Because Woody Allen used to go in there with her all the time, and that's Frank's wife. So when Mia came up with that character, which is really brilliant and hilarious, that's what she was doing.
Who's the guy in the center?
Must be, I don't know.
Sorry, yeah.
Well, here's what I was going to say about Frank Pellegrino is that my uncle married into the family that owns the other half of Reyes.
Wow.
So my family, part of my family, like owns or not really my family, but the Jewish side that married into there, like they go to Reyes all the time and like can get in like anytime they want.
You got to get like a case of sauce, dog, dude, something, man. Come on.
My uncle who lives in Palm Springs, he's like 82 or something. He has like a lot of stories about Frank Pellegrino and like hanging out at Reyes and stuff. It's just pretty.
I'll tell you something about. The Reyes tomato sauce is excellent.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just used it this weekend. Yeah.
It is so good. And I'm Italian, and I cook and I make tomato sauce. But I'm telling you, I've never tried a jarred tomato sauce. I mean, I try them once in a while just to see. But somebody told me about it, and I use it all the time.
It's awesome. Yeah, I don't know what it is, like how they did it, how they were able to jar like the Sunday gravy and the like they did it.
But you know, my mother, who was an incredible Italian cook, first of all, she would kill me if she knew I was eating jarred tomatoes. Luckily, she's not here to see it.
Yeah.
But she would take anything, like she, and I am in this habit to this day, like even the Rao's tomato sauce, which is excellent, I still put a little olive oil in the pot and maybe mash a couple of pieces of garlic just to wake it up, just to doctor it up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Makes you feel like you're really contributing to this jarred sauce.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm in the same way.
But it's good stuff.
Wow. Yeah. All these, I love that that scene in New York, like food and restaurants contributed to creative, like plays and movies and film, you know, it's all sort of this mishmash of like everybody sort of feeding off of each other. I love that.
That's keen over there. I'm surprised there hasn't been a doc made about that place yet.
There should be, yeah. Other storyline this ep, we got to talk about Big Pussy sort of going fed.
Yep.
Big Pussy wants to be Junior G-Man.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He nicknames himself Fat Man.
Yeah. It goes great. It goes great for him.
Anyway, spent too much time thinking about that one. Who's the actor that plays his contact? Is that Bo Dietl?
No.
He was also on 24. That was his other big thing. He was like a
Heavy guy.
Skip Lipari. I'm looking it up right now. He's played by Louis Lombardi.
That's right.
Yeah, and he's been in a bunch of stuff, but he's great too.
Yeah, no, he's great.
I feel like he may have. I thought I heard a story that he may have auditioned for Tony. I could be wrong, but
wow. I mean, I feel like a lot of people did.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
It would have been a very different show.
Yeah,
but
he works a lot. Yeah, he does a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Pussy has this like idea that he's gonna like join the feds and like go teach people about La Cosa Nostra and like give lectures and.
He wants to live in Arizona.
Right. Yeah.
That's his goal.
Giants spring training.
He's talking about San Francisco Giants, I assume.
The New York Football Giants don't work out in Phoenix.
You know, it's like, yeah, I'll be all right with the Giants spring training. It's okay.
Yeah.
Enough.
No, I always liked Willie Mays, I guess.
As a connection.
He's an old school Giants fan.
Yeah, right, I'll wear like a Polo Ground shirt or something. Yeah.
There's another baseball reference is that Janice goes, "My planner did Rick Cerrone's wedding."
Yes. By the way, that
deep cut.
I'm so glad you brought that up because that is such a sublime reference.
Yeah.
Who's gonna even get that? But when you get it, it's like perfect.
Yeah,
so you gotta love all those references that are like the writers like shouting another
little details.
I wonder if Matt Helm.
I wonder when they were pitching like the player that it should be. I wonder if Lee Mazzilli's name came up. That would have been just as good.
Yeah. Maybe too well known. Lee Mazzilli.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He was sort of a Brooklyn matinee idol kind of guy.
Right.
Tim
right.
Tuffle, you know.
Tim Tuffle.
Yeah.
I love Chris telling Puss about he's going to hijack a truck of Pokemon cards.
Yeah. It's a great thing, because it just shows you whatever's happening, whatever's in the moment.
Right.
Whatever, there's a lot of money in.
But also, that's like sort of that weird thing where like the show doesn't feel dated because some of its pop culture references are still fucking like with us, right? Like Pokemon is still like a thing, very much a thing. Yeah. But Pussy's like following Chris after he leaves the diner to go hijack this truck, and he just puts a fucking cyclist over his windshield.
Yes,
just like leaves the scene. Did he kill that guy? Is that guy dead?
He's in a coma, they say.
Oh yeah, right. He's in a coma in the hospital. Yeah. Oh, he hurt himself really bad too.
His leg was all fucked up. Like walking away like fucking Frankenstein. Like,
what if they would have seen you? What if they would have seen you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true. It's a really dumb thing to do.
Right. Oh yeah, it was super dumb.
We know that that all gets paid off down the line.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, not far from here. Yeah. I mean, probably like the arguably the best two back-to-back episodes of Sopranos is this, and then the season finale Funhouse where Pussy sleeps with the fishes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that, I mean, so Carmela, this whole episode is also dealing with, I think early on in the episode, she like sniffs Tony's laundry and smells his like tank top or whatever. And she smells perfume.
Yeah.
And she's sort of like, I mean, the irony is that Tony just broke it off with her, but now Carmela is like giving him shit about her.
The funniest thing about that is that the way that he justifies it, it's all okay. Cause I broke up with her.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Never mind that. Yes, of course. Yeah, it was like she's still accusing him of maybe he's doing it, maybe he's not.
Right.
But he's not. Yeah. But that's over. Don't worry about it.
It reminds me of like earlier in the series when he's like, "I had her tested for AIDS." Like he like wants like he wants bonus points because he's like, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not that bad.
It's like bringing your cat to the vet or something. Yeah,
right.
That line she has that like, you're putting me in a position where I feel sorry for a whore who fucks you is like so good.
Yeah. Really sort of nails it. Like, but then so she sort of like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seemed like she was sort of like stalking that guy Vic Musto, who she finds in the paint store. Like a couple episodes before, she shared a kiss with in the bathroom. He was like wallpapering her house,
right?
Yeah, and she sort of like tracks him down just to say like, "Oh, thanks for not showing up for lunch that day because I would have made a mistake."
And then he trembles even more because he's like, "You know who her husband is?"
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Also, it's like, that guy would know who her husband was. He did the wallpaper in his house. Like, he paid their check. He probably wrote the check.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Yeah, he was there. He showed up on the day that Carmela was probably hoping to bang him.
Right, like,
Mr. Musto, go to other job. I mean, and then that final scene with Tony and Carm sitting on the couch. You know.
By the way, that song that's played was so haunting to me. I went back and listened to the whole song a couple of times.
Yeah, saved the world today.
Saved the world today. My God, it's such a beautiful song.
Yeah,
one of the great endings to an episode. They're great at ending episodes with music too.
Yes, I love that. They're Tony and Carm sitting on the couch there, and he's like telling her what happened to Rich without telling her what happened, and. And
I gotta tell you this without being an accessory after the fact.
Right.
So basically, he told her. Yeah.
Yeah. But Carmela goes, "That was not a marriage made in heaven." And then they sit there in silence, the two of them.
Yeah.
It's like,
Well, I think in a way, Carmela is like sickly, sort of relieved that Janice's marriage, which she was like crying about earlier in the episode, because do you remember like at the engagement party, like Richie and Janice start doing these cheesy speeches and they both start crying like, and they kiss and then she runs off and cries. And she's envious of them.
Right.
And then when Tony's like, "Janice fucking murdered him."
But she remembers like Carmela. She said to Janice, you know, he's going to have a Kumad whenever, within a year. So talk to me then.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And I think a little bit like Carmela was trying to rub Janice's nose and shit. Like, you don't get to enjoy this when I have fucking endured so much pain and all this other shit. And then in the end, when Tony's like, she murdered him and fled. Like, I got a little bit of Carmela like, oh, thank God. Like, okay, I'm not that bad.
And Tony's running out of the house and he falls and his gun comes out of his mother's mouth.
Yeah, so
well,
weird.
We should talk about that because that's actually the last interaction that Tony has with his mother in the series. Well, I mean, like
outside of CGI.
Weird
yeah.
CGI.
Right, oh, right. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also the first time they come face to face this season because she's been recovering from the stroke.
She was really sick then, probably.
Yeah. Nancy Margin had cancer. Yeah.
But he falls, but you kind of see him as a little boy, like he falls and she's laughing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because of all the bullshit that he went through with Janice, he defended her to the mother. Well, how is she supposed to, you know, be good at anything the way you were with her, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So that was actually kind of a nice moment.
And it's funny because, but, you know, also Janice had just been sort of pushing Richie to make a move against her brother, which Livia did the same exact thing in season one.
That's the crazy part about it. It's like Tony's got enemies everywhere.
Yeah. And yet his own family.
He still has to look out for his mother. He has to look out for his sister. He's got to look out for Uncle Junior, and they would all screw him.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think perfect ending to the episode with Carm and Tony sort of just sitting there in shock. And then of course, Carm like, he's like, oh, I'm going to Rome with Rosalie April. If I don't, I just might commit suicide. Tony's like,
yeah, you know, and I think that's one of the things that's so great about that show is that I don't think it really ever been done in a mob film or any kind of mob treatment of anything where you get to see what it's like to be a mob wife and not a you know,
not aren't
just
candy.
The mafioso. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's not cliche. It's like, this is what she signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that like? And even though, and it's that deal with the devil where, you know, I like all my things,
but
this is what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and she later on in the series, she flirts with having like some semblance of normalcy outside of a mob wife situation.
Right.
And she can't function. She can't function without it.
Right. Right.
And also, you know, the funny thing about her too is that she's a tough broad on her own. She's a tough cookie.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so, she is.
Like, she doesn't suffer fools.
She's very smart.
Yeah, well, earlier this season we see it with the Ragut pie. You know, she like bribes the woman to write the letter for Meadow for Georgetown. I mean,
well, you know, it's crazy is that Italians are so nuts about little things like that. Like my mother lived in this building in Corona, and my mother, when she made eggplant parmesan, she would flour the eggplant, not breadcrumb it. So the woman across the hall did breadcrumbs, and my mother didn't talk to her for 2 years. For real. And she's like, she cannot imagine being friends with someone that would create an abomination like that.
That is so funny.
So that's how they are. You know, I see that. Like you think that my mother wasn't like evil like his mother, but they're a little bit nuts, you know, like they.
Oh yeah.
They're capable of, it's really something, man. That's why the show is so good, because David Chase comes from a family, an Italian family, so he delves into areas of that whole culture, and that again, you don't always see it. It's very, very original and different.
Yeah, he gets it right in the details. Like they take the time to do that. Yeah. And I think that's why it was like so recognizable to people, especially like, you know, Jersey, New York, tri-state area people. But yeah, good app. Anything else we want to say about the app, guys? Like what, any favorite lines, any favorite moments, anything else? MVP of the episode? What do you think?
MVP of the episode.
Hard acting to say. Wise, story wise.
I mean, it's a great Ada Turturro episode. I mean,
yeah, you gotta give it to her.
Oh, that final scene where Tony's putting her on the bus.
She went 3 for 4 with 4 RBIs in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode.
Yeah.
You can't take it away from her. But it was I'm really glad that I watched it, like I said, because I haven't I watched the first 2 episodes, I think, with my kid. And it's weird. It's like when you watch the first couple of episodes of Seinfeld or something like that. Oh, it's gonna get so much better, you know?
Right.
I know, I always tell people like get to season 2 is when it really starts cooking. That's like when it really starts.
I mean, there's fantastic moments in season 1, but like
it takes a few episodes. Going back to other shows to binge, everybody always talks about The Wire. You guys Wire guys?
Oh yeah. Big time.
I've never gotten past 3rd episode of season 1, because to me, I'm not saying this that I'm wrong, because I'm sure that to me it just looks like a regular cop show, and everybody says but you got to hang in there because it gets better and better and better.
It is like quintessential, when you think of slow burn, it is a slow burn, but it pays off. It really pays off.
That's what everybody says.
No, seasons 3 and 4 of The Wire are up there with any season of Sopranos.
And The Wire may have been one of the first, you know, super binge shows.
Oh yeah,
that everybody talks about as, you know, you must see this show.
You don't hear a lot of people say like, I watched The Wire while it was on. You know, I think a lot of people found it after the fact.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it became that's how you watched shows like that. Yeah,
Good app, guys. Should we, Joey, you want to do the ad read?
Oh shit, I gotta do the ad read.
Wow, Satch Realities?
I wish.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Can't you get Bay Cities or somebody to sign on? What's the matter with you?
I wish we could. We're trying to get this up.
Olive Garden.
Get Pinocchio, Monte Carlo.
Yeah, there you go.
You want me to do the ad read?
Yeah, go for it.
You asked to do it.
Hey, guys, sports are coming back. So are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. You know, I looked today, and I think I might open an account.
I'm shocked.
They got that.
You're considering it. Wow.
The Yankees over-under is 36.5. I'm going to
go
with
the over.
I'm going to go with the over. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. On the entertainment side, Floyd Money Mayweather joins the Bet Online team to bring you a brand new segment, The Ice is Right. This guy fucking gambles a lot. Floyd talks all about his jewelry and gives you the chance to bet on the cost of his bling to win some great prizes. Visit Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
You got to be a real scumbag to bet on that. Yeah. My God.
There's plenty. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE.
Especially when placing those Floyd Mayweather jewelry bets, make sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Yeah.
You degenerate.
It might not count for the jewelry bets, though. You might get like a cent, you know.
But take the over. Take the over for the Yanks.
Take the over. That's
you guys are
Spellman's pick.
You guys are both Yankee fans, right?
We are. We are.
Dave is in the league. Dave is the guy I invited.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for signing on, man.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, you know, we have time. We have time right now.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of fantasy baseball. I mean, I've done it a few times, but like 60 games, I could do that.
Why not?
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Sounds like I could do that. Yeah. I've never been a sports fan.
Paul's the funniest thing because his father is a huge Yankee fan. And if you go to Paul's house, they have a bar in the basement that is just all Yankees memorabilia. And the funniest thing is to just see Paul standing at the bar there.
My dad
couldn't
tried
care less.
So hard.
Just
so
surrounded,
hard to get me
surrounded by Yankee memorabilia. It's the funniest
thing. In a way,
thing.
Though, you know, like his dad is probably a little bit relieved because he didn't like ruin his stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, don't touch my World Series ball.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. So this last segment we'll do is called Fucking Internet. This is where we source questions, comments, hot takes from around the internet, Reddit, Twitter. That's basically it.
Around
and we
the
respond
internet.
To them. Yeah. So this one from Reddit, user East_by_God_Kentucky. Says, Jackie Jr. speaking up at the meeting with Tony, Dick Barone, and Richie was way out of bounds. Season 2, episode 12, Knight in White Satin Armor, third or fourth scene. Every time I watch it, I forget how far Jackie Jr. goes on his rant about the dispute over Coke on the Barone routes and who will get the Fairfield trucking routes. Shouldn't he be waiting in the car? I did think it was kind of weird that
it
would be there.
It's kind of a little bit like a callback to when Sonny pipes in during the Salazzo meeting, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
Very true.
And, you know, that's way out of line. And they ended up
yeah, they both
vulnerability and they shot his father.
Yeah, they both end up in the same place. So
yeah, but it's weird that like because he's like barely in college, right? Or he's in college. I mean,
which makes you think that David Chase knew that like the plan to have him have that big
story. Yeah, I think it was like, okay, we got to introduce this kid and set him up maybe for the next season.
Yeah.
Where do we put him in? But realistically, like, are you bringing that kid to that meeting with the boss of the family? Like,
yeah, the only thing I can think of is because he's the son of a well-respected and loved character or, you know, in the story, that maybe that's why he's being treated that way.
Right.
Yeah. But it still doesn't seem right.
It just shows that Richie really has no upper hand, like, you know, because Richie ultimately decides to bring him there, and it's like, Jackie's kid's not gonna cut it. It's not.
That reminds me, by the way, how many references? There were three references to Richie's balls. Like Richie's got a lot of balls.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Junior said it once, and then Bacala said it. Somebody else said it. Mm-hmm.
The man has tremendous moxie for his size.
Yeah, exactly. But like, it shows that that's all he's really got. He's just, right. All sizzle, no steak.
And that was his downfall. Okay, cool. This next one is a weird one from also from Reddit. User Lighty711. First time watcher, absolutely impressed by the show. Just finished watching Knight in White Satin Armor. So guys, I wanted to share this story right away. I started the show in quarantine last Saturday and have been hooked since. I've been a fan of Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad, my favorite show, but Sopranos is going up there. I just reached season 2, episode 12, and was not paying attention to the episode, in parentheses, jerking off, but suddenly heard a gunshot and saw that scene. Immediately, I rewinded to see if Richie did something wrong, and fuck, he punched her and Janice fucking shot him in the heart. This is, whoa, I need to process this. Until now, I love the character development and the power struggles, and here there is a new one. Huh? He sort of glosses over the fact that he's just jerking off while watching The Sopranos.
Yeah, exactly. He's burying the lead here. Right. I don't think that's a show you would do that to unless you're a rhesus monkey.
But he loves the show, but he was just like, he was binging it, and then he's like, but I gotta jerk off right now.
All this talk about Pokemon cards. Oh, yeah. Fuck.
You know, look, I mean, I really don't want to judge.
Right. That's true.
The guy, he's a fan of your show, too, so.
Yeah. Lighty711, put it down, man. If you're listening right now, just wait until it's over.
What are you wearing, Lighty711?
Actually, yeah, man, let's get into it. Like, call us up. Let's figure
out. Yeah, please.
This one from user Nico Tesla. Wish we saw more from Big Pussy. Pussy's easily one of my favorite characters on the show, even as a rat. His inner demons were slowly eating him alive, and I'm sure his character arc would have been very interesting to follow in the second half of the show as everything turns to shit. Granted, this would completely change the whole story, but it's something I always wonder. What if? I don't know. What the fuck, huh?
That's how says the guy who invented alternate current.
Yeah, right.
Brilliant. What do you guys think if Pussy had survived season 2? Do you guys have any speculation what his story would have looked like?
Well, first of all, I remember watching at the time thinking, wow, that's a really great character to lose.
Oh, yes.
And when you see so that, early, you know, they did that in Game of Thrones all the time.
Yeah. Right.
But that's when you realize that's such a great thing to do because no one's safe. So you watch the shows and you're like, who's going to be next, you know?
Yep.
And it was not, it wasn't quite, it didn't happen as often on Sopranos as it did on Game of Thrones, I think. I didn't really watch Game of Thrones.
Yes.
First two seasons.
No, but they killed like everyone in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, everyone got killed.
So I think they kind of overdid it maybe, but it adds that danger. But as a watcher, as a fan of the show, I felt a jolt from losing that character. I kind of always thought he'd somehow figure out a way to hang around, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is, I think, a great device though, to have his death always hanging over Tony.
Right.
You know, like the curse of Pussy's memory, like haunts him for the rest of the series. And
the show definitely gets markedly darker after Tony has to kill one of his best friends. Right.
Right.
That's a really good point. It does. It gets darker after that.
Yeah.
Darker.
I feel like then, after that episode too, in the collective consciousness of society, like the Sopranos started to get a lot more popular. Once they killed him off, people started to talk about it more and get more like start watching it on season 3.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, as far as what would have happened with Pussy, like if he had lived, there was no way that was ending in him retiring to Arizona and giving lectures.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, he and Scatino open a ranch out in Phoenix. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. You always got to worry about Puss in Scottsdale.
Towards the end of the series, it was really palpable, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There were like promos like, tonight, somebody's got to go.
Yep.
And you're like, who is that somebody going to be? And there's like five really legit choices here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The joke right. Me and my buddy would always make is that they would tease that like somebody's got to go. And then in the episode, it'd be like, to the store, buy me a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to Satriales and get me some.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's, yeah. Or it's like Adriana's dog or something that ends up getting killed.
Right. Right.
All right. This one from Twitter, from at Valley of the Word. I can't figure out how much all the talk about anti-Italian sentiment in The Sopranos is serious or satirical, in quotation marks. I'm sick of people assuming I'm a thug because my last name ends in a vowel. Like, holy shit, this is 99, not 19.
You talk about the characters feeling that way?
I guess just how the writers work that into the show.
That wonderful Phil Leotardo monologue where he goes on how they changed his name. And
yeah, it used to
Leonardo.
Leonardo.
Yeah.
You know what it is like, this is a really good question, actually, because if you grew up Italian-American, in my case, I'm third generation, right? So my grandparents were born in Italy. My parents, would they be second generation and then me?
I guess...
Yeah, I think.
Well, yeah, first.
That's how it works.
Yeah. If they're yeah.
In any event, though, when I was a little kid, growing up in New York, it got really cool to be an Italian American because of De Niro and Pacino and Rocky and all that stuff. It became and before that, it was Sinatra and Joe DiMaggio, obviously, who were these Italian American heroes. But what people don't know is that these guys we grew up with. There was a lot of hate on the Italians. Either you're all gangsters or you're greaseballs, you're wetbacks. The Irish, had control of New York. So the Italians did not even assimilate into those cops and firemen jobs for a full generation and a half to two generations.
Right.
Of course, once they caught up and learned the language, and obviously they became lawyers and they became politicians and they assimilated beautifully, but it took longer for them.
Right.
And along the way, like my parents were, they would tell me, they used to call us WOPs, we'd get in fights all the time.
Right.
So that is part of the DNA that's in these characters. If they didn't experience it, their parents did. So they were influenced by it. It's hard to believe.
Right.
Yeah. But I remember when I was in grade school, I had a friend who was Irish. It's funny because all the kids I knew were either Irish, Italian, or Irish and Italian mixed. Mostly. And I remember him being a little racist prick and saying shit about Italians and stuff like that. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Really started to go away in the 70s and onward.
Right.
And of course, once The Godfather became such a huge, iconic classic, a lot of people's opinions were changing. Maybe it's funny because I used to work for these Israelis. And I remember them talking about how they loved the way the Italian family structure was. And they kind of got it from The Godfather. It's just like, it's a weird lesson. But they loved the idea, though, that people were, that they were still like so close and what family meant and all of that.
Sure.
And yet there's another side to it. And again, The Sopranos is so much more innovative in the way they show it, with the way the mother is and the way the sibling rivalries are and the whole insanity of the mob being interconnected with that.
Right.
So that's your answer to that question.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, hey, that's a good answer.
I don't think we could say it better than that. Thanks, Lou.
Oh, it's fine. I've never gotten a chance to really let that go, man.
That was awesome. Great. Well, I think we need to move on to our last question here. This from Twitter, at The Sopranos Club. This was a poll they ran.
Friend of the pod.
Would Pauly whack, in parentheses, kill? Who doesn't know that if you're watching Sopranos? Tony Soprano for a payment of $500,000. Options are yes, 100% he would. Yes, he probably would. No, probably would not. No, 100% he would not. Would Pauly Walnuts whack Tony Soprano for $500,000?
First of all, I have to requote the greatest Pauly Walnuts line. Not the greatest, but one of the ones that always made me laugh. Hey, Tom, I'm going up to the Baja Fresh. You want something?
Yes, yeah.
You know, I would say towards the end of the series, everybody's suspect, right? You think everybody's going to kill Tony or somebody's going to betray him. And they make it look like it could be anybody. And in the end, I always felt that the most loyal character was Paulie Walnuts.
Well, because he's got nothing else, right?
I would say probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I mean, yeah, you know, he's very loyal, and he was loyal to his father. And
I don't think he's the kind of guy that it's not all about the money for him.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, well, he was able to smother an old woman to death for whatever money she had under her mattress.
True. But you know what? That was obviously years of repressed anger because she hated him as a child, you know, as a kid.
So. That plays into Tony's safety because now Paulie Walnuts doesn't need the money.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think Paulie Walnuts doesn't have a lot of loyalty, but
he did have the whole storyline where he was going behind Tony's back with Johnny Sack. So, I mean.
Mm. Yeah, but it's not the same as killing somebody. Tony in cold blood, right?
It's a very interesting world that they live in because, you know, that's the other thing that's so well illustrated is that, you know, there's this structure, this mob structure, this mob family, but everybody's still into their own thing. Everybody's still like hustling for something else on the side. And if they think it's worth bringing in, they'll share it or whatever, but everybody's got something going on. And, you know, like when they said the pussy in the episode, we're going to go rob that truck. You want to come with us for old time's sake? Whatever, you know, whatever. It's like, it's just, that's just something that came up. Like Christopher figured, that's just your job. It's not like they sit down and have a board meeting and go, well, we're going to do this, this, and this. Right. They're just a bunch of criminals, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's why the question comes up, right? Because they all are sort of self-centered to a point, and they talk about loyalty and they talk about this thing of ours and the oath they all took. But in the end, you know, I mean, I guess like, if I don't know if Paulie Walnuts spent time in jail at this point in the series instead of like flipping, but I guess that's a good test, right? If you're going to go to jail and not flip, then you probably wouldn't kill Tony for $500,000.
You know, the greatest line, or to put it in perspective, was, which applies to this, was that great line in Goodfellas when Henry Hill says, you know, what they could never understand was that the mob was like the FBI for wise guys. It's like, you got these, it's just this one organization where we can monitor our own, but everybody's off being able to do whatever the fuck they want, you know, but they're protected in their own.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and they have their own sense of justice too. And all of that, they have their own rules. You know, you can't kill a made guy. Of course they do anyway.
And that, well,
right. Yeah.
But Paulie has to at least like convince himself that that's what he's buying into. And that's what he's like 100% going in on. Right. Like, because he's got, like you said it, Lou, he has nothing else. He's got no family. It's just Tony. Right?
Tony's his guy, man. He would do anything. Yeah.
Well, so with just over 3,000 votes, you're right. No, 100% he would not, is leading with 31% of the votes. So,
wow, there you go. Oh, the people know what they're talking about.
That's all I got for fucking internet.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Lou, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have anything you want to plug to the fans?
Where can we find you on social media?
Yeah.
Oh, at Lou DiMaggio on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, Lou DiMaggio.
Great.
Nice. And remind everybody again the name of your documentary.
Oh, yeah. The doc is, and this is a perfect time to watch my doc because you have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And it's on Amazon. It's called Where Have You Gone, Lou DiMaggio? Remember Where Have You Gone, Joe DiMaggio?
Yes.
Or? Yes.
Okay. And if you like comedy, you like stand up, you like, you know, famous news comedians being interviewed, check it out, you'll love it.
Guys, as always, you can find us at osopranospod on Twitter and Instagram, or email us your thoughts, concerns, queries, other times during the series that you've decided to jerk off at osopranospod@gmail.com.
let us know.
Thank you for listening. Thank you, Lou, for coming on. This was a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh.
Good stuff.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh. Oh.